And welcome back to North Shore Sports Night on a Monday night. We've been off for a couple of weeks, holidays in there and vacations and other stuff, but we're back. And I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Kapowski, voice of North Shore Sports and the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell. We got a lot of people lined up to get back in action tonight as we roll through the summertime. Man, it is flying along. I just shut the music down here. And let me just tell you the lineup for tonight. We will start off with golf writer and sports historian Gary Larrabee, as we always do. And on the agenda, of course, will be the British Open from a couple of weeks ago, along with a fantastic play of the Turner brothers locally and around the region. We'll also be talking with Paul Boudreau. He is the executive and technical director of the Grand Prix of Beverly. That's coming up this week on the North Shore. Ben Goodhue will be chatting with him some football, as he's an assistant football coach, formerly at Beverly High School, now moving over to Marblehead High School. And we'll talk also with Steve Krause of the Daily Item. He's the sports editor of the Item. And a name familiar to everybody on the North Shore, former Swampscott football coach Steve Dombowski. We'll talk with Coach Dombowski as well. I believe he's the past president of the Football Coaches Association, or maybe the current president of the Football Coaches Association in Massachusetts. And also he's the very successful coach of Milton High School. In fact, he was the winner in late September last year of the Patriots High School Coach of the Week Award. So we'll resume our acquaintances with Coach Dombowski, as we said we would. In fact, it was just about this time a year ago, I believe, when we talked with Steve as he was headed out of town.
Hi, Rick. How are
you? Well, I'm here, Coach. How are you?
Well, I want to thank your lovely wife, Martha, for bringing me in a bowl of her goulash.
That's not goulash. It is. She's Italian. It's
pasta.
It's
pasta with sauce and ground beef.
But it's not goulash.
No, that's what we call it in my house.
No, they call it bice de gazoogle.
Not in an Irish household.
In the West
it was
house.
Goulash.
Well, that's not Irish. That's, you're not in an Irish household. You're only in a half-Irish household at the moment. Anyway, Coach, we got a lot of calls to make, a lot of people to talk with tonight, and as I said, we'll start with Gary Larrabee, start some golf. I did talk with James Turner, who was the winner last week of the New England event, and from wire to wire, as they say, I believe. And he actually lost the tournament this weekend at Cape Ann to, I can't remember his name, but a very familiar name on Gary will update us on that. I shouldn't try to talk outside of my comfort zone here. So anyway, what's on your mind, Coach, before we go to our first interview?
Well, I want to congratulate the Beverly Little Leaguers, the District 15 All-Star team champions. They are the sectional champions. They defeated Andover this past week, and they are going to the state finals. They'll be one of the four semifinalist teams. A good friend of ours and former and a colleague of mine and former of yours, Rich Francis, is one of the coaches, and his son, Griffin, is one of the he's the starting shortstop on the team. And so we want to wish them continued success as they march on to hopefully a state title. It's Beverly's first sectional title in Little League, and so now they have a chance to take home a state title. So we wish them continued
doesn't
success.
Goulash doesn't have that kind of pasta, and it doesn't have red tomatoes.
My mother had that. It was either this or it was elbow.
But not with red tomatoes. No, sure. I don't think so. I don't think so. But anyway, what do I know?
It's good.
Okay. That's good. All right, we will take a quick break, come back with Gary Larrabee as we are underway now on North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night, and I guess the Democrat National Dysfunction Convention is on as well. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows. Why Anderson? With low E glass, low maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sittleman Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sittleman Street. Treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite, eat, drink,
Sylvan Street Grill.
The Sylvan Street Grill has a great new game time menu featuring delicious new dishes, specials, and all-time favorites, too.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
The Bradford Tavern, the Rowley Destination Restaurant, featuring many modern touches, nestled in a rustic setting, offering the finest steaks, seafood, and many quality daily specials. The Bradford Tavern is open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to midnight, serving lunch and dinner. See you soon at the Bradford Tavern in Rowley, 89 Haverhill Street, Route 133. And check us out at bradfordtavern.com.
All right, we have made connections with Gary Larrabee, and hot off the golf circuit we missed last week, that incredible finish at the British Open, and then the Turner brothers making noise here in Massachusetts. Hi, Gary, where do we start?
I think we got to start local, guys, especially since you guys are Cape Anners. We have to certainly celebrate what's going on at Bass Rocks with the Turner brothers, James, age 18, Mark, age 16, and Abby Hood. Well, now who has emerged probably is our best women's amateur player here on the North Shore. But first of all, James Turner, 18 years old, just graduated from St. John's Prep, guys. Helped lead the team, to St. John's Prep, to the state championship last fall, Division I. He really comes out of nowhere. He hasn't done anything special in any tournaments this year. He comes really out of nowhere, even though we know who he is and his potential, and blows away the field at the New England Amateur last week at Hartford Golf Club, a very ritzy, very stylish, old-style golf course, where James starts out with a 73 on the first round. Never seen the course before. And my goodness, if he doesn't come out and shoot 67, I think 68, 67, 65, the last three rounds, the lowest three rounds in the second and third round ever shot at the New England Amateur. And we're talking like the 89th New England Amateur. He wins by five shots, shooting 7 under 273. An extraordinary accomplishment for a young man who has not won any major or significant amateur tournament in New England. So our hats off goes to James Turner after an amazing finish last week.
You know, Gary, certainly the case of a young man who certainly we have read about his accomplishments at the prep and all, and the quality of his play, but to go to Hartford and to play basically under the radar, you know, where there were probably a lot bigger names out there with a lot of higher expectations. He comes in sure of himself, really confident, but he doesn't have that pressure that a lot of these other guys were playing under that they had to achieve. He went out there and in one of the more relaxed atmospheres for him that he put himself into, just went out and played outstandingly steady golf.
That says it all, Tim, and add to that the fact that he was really being chased that last round. He knows the pressure was on, and now it goes on in the last round with the pressure on and shoots the lowest round of the tournament all week. It's a three-day tournament, 18-18, then 36 the last day. And he becomes the second North Shore connected winner of the New England Amateur in 2 years, and another prep connection, because Nick McLaughlin from the prep won it last year as he was getting ready for his senior year at the University of Virginia, playing at a far corner. And now in 2 years we have two local North Shore connected New England Amateur champions, when we've only had two New England Amateur champions from the area in the previous, like, 87 years, and the last one was in 1950, Bobby Knowles for myopia. Before that, it was 1934, I believe, Joe Batchelor from Salem. So, feast or famine, it's right now a wonderful feast, and James takes this week off, plays in a few non-headline tournaments the next few weeks. He's not going to go to school in the fall. He's going to try to get some tutoring and get his grades up. I think he's going to take college entrance courses, or testing, I should say, in the next spring, or next, with this coming winter, and he still hopes to maybe go Ivy League, or he may now get some serious overtures to play at least Division II college golf somewhere, starting in the fall of 2017.
You know, certainly, Gary, the prospect of even a Division I offer where, you know, a coaching staff is going to look at this young man, and, you know, they're going to look at his resume, and they're going to say, okay, here's a kid who didn't succumb to pressure on a large stage, played some of his best golf ever. You know, can we get some of that out of him? He doesn't have to be the number one, but, boy, if you've got a number three or four on your team that can play to that kind of a level, you know, D1 schools are looking for those guys too.
Yeah, it'll be a lower-level Division One, or it could be Division Two anywhere, which now brings us to his younger brother, 16-year-old Mark, who had a great first round last Monday at the USGA Junior Championship, shot 73, tied for 27th after one round. He needs to finish in the top 64 to get the match play on Wednesday. This is down at the Honors Course down in Tennessee. And he stumbled a little bit, shot 81 the second day, missed the cut for match play, but came... drove back with his mom, and lo and behold, he got to Hartford in time to caddy for his brother the final day, and it didn't turn out to be a bad pairing. Next Monday is hopefully could very well be Mark's week. He will definitely be a favorite to win the Massachusetts Junior Amateur, which runs Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 18 holes each day, right here at Kernwood, and he knows Kernwood because St. John's Prep golf team plays a few matches there each fall, so I won't be surprised if Mark follows up his brother's great victory and does the same at the Mass Amateur next Monday through Wednesday.
Gary, how much does course awareness and knowledge of the layout of the course help a golfer in some of these tournaments?
Well, I think James gave you the answer last week when he, sight unseen, shoots 73 the first day. He's only six shots behind with three rounds to go, and he's ended up, he was six behind after two rounds, and he made the cut easily with a clutch 68 second round. He's still six shots behind after two rounds, and he just cranks it up those two rounds, the final two rounds on Thursday, and we saw what he has done. Mark, I think, definitely has to be favored next week. We'll see how it goes, but it's been very exciting. One other sidelight, guys, to what happened last week with James, and what happened with him this weekend, the final 2 days of the Bass Rocks Club Championship, and he did not win.
I saw that, and that, I don't know, man. I guess that's the old sports letdown, perhaps, huh?
It could be part letdown also. It's just golf. Look at it. Do we know who's going to win the PGA this week? No.
Uh-huh.
There's who knows how many players with the potential. That's the beauty of golf. It's the most unpredictable individual game. Tennis, you can almost predict every week who's going to make the final four to the semifinals, but not in golf. And that's congratulations to George Mead for winning with a 289. He beat James, the runner-up, by three. And there's Abby Hood again, who finished fourth last week at the State Women's Medal Play Championship, 36 holes medal play. She finished fourth, and then she wins the Women's Club Championship at Bass Rocks this weekend. She's rapidly, you know, improving her game. You know, she's playing at Sacred Heart down in Connecticut. And right now, Bass Rocks is the center of North Shore golf, I think, golfing superiority.
Excellent. Excellent stuff, Gary. And I did talk to James. Thank you for your help in that. His cell phone is broken, and he wasn't able to call out, so we couldn't make connections this week. But hopefully, we will get him on next week. So I appreciate your help, Gary. Now, let's go back a couple of weeks briefly, if we can, and your thoughts on that amazing British Open.
It was amazing, and you never know what you're going to see something extraordinary. It seems like in almost every major this year, and of course last year too with Jordan Spieth dominating all four, winning two and finishing second in two. But this year, a fellow from Great Britain, Willett, wins the Masters. The U.S. Open rolls around, and it's Dustin Johnson finally breaking through, and now at the British Open, an incredible head-to-head battle the last day between Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson, the old-timer again. Well, a couple of 40-year-old guys. You know, Stenson's 40.
Right.
Mickelson's 46. We all know Stenson's story. Had a great first few years as a pro. Then he went, hit rock bottom. He's come back the last 4 or 5 years. And certainly now, after he wins his first major at Royal Troon, he's in that highest echelon of player, even though he's 40. Phil Mickelson, 46, going to become the second oldest player to win, a third oldest player to win a major. He didn't quite make it, but a great last day. They both played spectacular golf. Both shot, Stenson shot the tied for the lowest round in majors history, shooting 63. I think Mickelson shot 65 or 6. And now it only sets us up for this week's major, the fourth and final major, the PGA Championship at Baltusrol, being played early because of the Olympics, and they're playing golf in the Olympics for the first time in 100-plus years, even though so many of the top players are staying away because of the, supposedly because of the Zika virus. But it should be a great week at Baltusrol. It made some great history at Baltusrol in majors. And how could you pick a favorite, Tim, with all of these, all the top players will be there, and Spieth is due to break through. So isn't Day. So isn't McIlroy. We have, you know, three first-time major winners this year already. Will we have a fourth?
Well, you know, it's funny, you know, watching that. Early on, I was never a big Phil fan, but over the last few years and difficulties, the medical issues that he has overcome, and he's been such a great ambassador for the game, really picking up the slack, I think, when Tiger dropped the ball.
So are you predicting Mickelson to win this week?
I think so. I think that, you know, he was so gracious in defeat last week, but he also said, you know, I'm sure you heard it, you know, I'm glad that he won, but I'm disappointed it was at my expense. You know, and that was so brutally honest. Not a lot of guys would come out and say that, and he mentioned it twice. So, you know, it was kind of eating at him that he played the best golf of his life, you know, those last couple of days, especially that last day, and he just couldn't get over the hump and catch Stenson. But I think he's going to be so focused, knowing his game is going so well right now. I think he's going to be one of the favorites going in. I'm putting my dollar on Phil.
Yeah, I have an inkling you may be right. I don't know why, but we have to also take our caps off and put it over our heart, at least for one moment, for the heartbreaking finish yesterday for Canadian Steve Wheatcroft, who sculled his bunker shot. You may have seen in the 18th hole yesterday. He needed to get up and down from the bunker, which would normally be a piece of cake for these guys. They're so good out of the bunker, but he sculls his bunker shot across the green into a small pond, and so he doesn't get into a playoff with Jonathan Villegas. But my goodness, you saw the finish there, guys. One player at 276, three at 277, four at 278, a tremendous finish to the Canadian Open, which didn't have too many of the big names in it, but Dustin Johnson was right there. I give him credit for playing. He finished one back, and I think Dustin's the man to beat this week, Tim.
All right, Gary, we have to run, but what do you got planned for Friday in the Salem News?
I think we have to preview in very significant style the Mass Junior coming up Monday through Wednesday at Kernwood with a local young man, I think the favorite, as I just mentioned, in Mark Turner. And Kernwood has a tremendous history hosting the State Junior Championship. And this will be like the fifth major championship they hosted since 2007. They're the most popular championship course right now in New England, and I think they're going to have some tremendous scores. You know, two tennis par next week. I won't be surprised if the winning score is a record 206 or 207, 3-4, 5 under par. The way these young kids play so good, hit it so far, they're just going to be able to deal with Kernwood small greens. We'll see how it goes.
All right, we'll pick it up next Monday. Thank you so much, Gary.
Thank you so much, man. Carry on.
All right.
Gary
Larrabee, sports historian, sports writer for so many years here on the North Shore.
And if you haven't read his column on Fridays, you have to read it. Because
absolutely.
It is historical every week.
All right. We're going to talk some bicycle racing in a minute.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trusts, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
All right, we're back, and we're going to talk some bicycle racing now with Paul Boudreau, who is the executive and technical director of the Grand Prix of Beverly. Hi, Paul.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Well, we're doing well, and this is I actually saw the article in the Globe North that the Grand Prix of Beverly is coming up, and several years it took place, well, not the Grand Prix of Beverly, but a Grand Prix did take place in Gloucester. And give us a little background, Paul, on yourself, and then a little bit about this race before we get in any deeper.
Yeah, sure. Actually, the Gloucester one is still going on, so that goes on in October, and it's a totally different kind of bike racing. But the one going on Wednesday is right in the heart of downtown Beverly. The start line is right on Cabot Street in front of St. Mary's Church. And from 4 to 8 o'clock, there will be bikes tearing it up through downtown Beverly. I started this race about 8 years ago with a former professional, Tim Johnson, who used to live about a mile away from the course. And he designed this really killer technical course. And we had pretty much getting right out of the gate a lot of popularity from both spectators and racers.
Paul, give us before you go, Tim. Give us a little bit of background, please, on your educational and other experience, if you would, Paul. Bring us up from where you are now.
Yeah, sure. So in my day job, I'm an engineer, but I've been putting on bike races since about 1999 when I did the Grand Prix of Gloucester, which was a one-day 150 rider event, and it's turned into a two-day international event with over 1,000 riders per day. So I've been doing that since 99 straight through, and 8 years ago we started the Grand Prix of Beverly. So those are the two events that I put on. I also am president of Essex County Velo, which is a cycling club based here in Beverly. We have about 50-60 members. We do rides. We have a junior development program which is involved in bicycle racing at mountain biking and cyclocross. And we do some other events as well and rides.
Paul, can you take us through the layout of the course the riders will attack on Wednesday?
Yeah, sure. So it's a really challenging course. What's challenging about this course really is it has a lot of good corners in it. There's a race a couple of weeks after ours in Salem. Which is also challenging, but in a different way. That's goes around Salem Common, and if everyone's familiar with Salem Common, it's pretty much an oval. So that's going to be a fast race, but you're basically turning right the whole time. For Beverly, being that we start downtown Beverly, we start right at the church, and then we're gonna bang a quick right and go towards the library, and that's a really tight right. And then when you pass the library, there's what we call the chicane because it's a quick left and then a quick right where you end up back on Dane Street. So it's very challenging because you're traveling at a lot of speeds. These guys are, the pro men, the pro women. They're going to be taking these corners at over 30 miles an hour sometimes. And you've got riders just a couple of feet away from you. So you really have to have really good bike handling skills. And when you think about these races are short and fast, you're really expending a lot of energy. And to do all that stuff, it's kind of like car racing. You have to keep you cool. And same thing here. You know, if you lose your cool, you got a rider about 2 feet away from you. They're going to take you out on the corner. So very challenging course. When I compare it to bring Salem back into it again, I like to consider that like NASCAR, where you're going around corners, around track. And then for Beverly, I think that's more like F1 racing, where it's very technical. You have to know how to take a corner. You want to take it as fast as you can, but if you take it too fast, you're going to spin out and crash. And that's one of the reasons our event, we can't let any beginners in it. You have to have a racing license from USA Cycling, but you also have to reach a certain level to be able to do our event.
What is the distance of the course?
I'm sorry?
What's the distance of the course?
It's only 1/6 of a mile.
Oh.
So, yeah, so it's super fast. And, you know, the great thing about the event, there's three bars in the course that generally serve beer on the course, so you can watch from the Atomic Cafe, who has a beer license now. They'll be serving from Ipswich Ale, right on the sidewalk, so you can sit there and enjoy a cocktail, and you're going to see them every few minutes coming around. Not like the Tour de France, where you see them come by once, and then you don't see them again until the next day.
One of my former students from Gloucester High School, Sean Milne, was very successful early in the history of the Beverly Grand Prix, and I believe he won it at least once or twice.
He did. He did. I know Sean well, and there is a picture of me about 20 years ago when I beat him in a bike race. I've never done that.
Paul, do you have any names here that you might want to mention that some of the spectators quaffing an ale or two might be looking at coming around first each time?
Yeah, so, you know, in the men's race, one of my favorite riders actually won the event for his first. He's been racing just about every year we put the race on. And his name is Adam Meyerson. He's in Boston. He's done so much for the sport of cycling, but he's also a really good racer. He just retired from his professional career a year ago, and he did our race and won it for the first time last year. He's going to be back as an amateur and a new dad. And he's going to be really interesting to watch because he's such a dynamic racer. So I can't wait to see that on the men's side. But he's going to have his hands full because there are a lot of teams that are gunning for the win. So cycling is a team sport, as you may know. There's going to be a lot of people attacking him because they know that he wants to win this race. So that's one racer I would point to in the men's. In the women's group, that's going to be kind of cool, too. We've got, so the women's event is the state championship event. And Ellen Noble, she's originally from Maine. She went to UMass Amherst recently. She's kind of the next thing in cycling. She is the real deal. Not only is she a sweetheart and great to her sponsors, but she is a fierce competitor. She is just, she's the eye of the tiger, if I can quote that corny song there. She is just a very fierce competitor. She was the state champion last year, and I think she's going to have a big X on her back for this event.
Well, Paul, it's okay to quote someone as long as you cite her. So I guess cite them. I guess it was Survivor that did Eye of the Tiger. You know, just
yes, with
convention brouhaha and stuff. Paul, this is absolutely fascinating, but we're a little pressed for time. Is there anything else you want to mention? Because this sounds like not only a great competitive event, but also a pretty interesting night out for I would say for the family.
It is. We've got some kids races at the Common. Ipswich Brewing is going to have free soda for the kids who do the kids race, and then we have a kids parade where they're going to get to go on the race course, do like a half a lap. It's really family friendly. And what I tell a lot of people is that once I can get somebody there, it's tough to talk about bike racing and get the point across, but once I can get somebody there, I know they're going to come back the next year. It's that good an event, and I'm not saying it because I put it on. It's just bike racing is so exciting, and this event in particular is really exciting.
And it looks like you're going to have good weather, too. Paul, I appreciate it. Hope to talk to you again soon. We can follow up on this in the near future and other stuff you got going on.
Great. Thank you guys for reaching out. Really appreciate it.
All right, Paul. Good luck. Paul. Have fun. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is Paul Boudreau, who is the executive and technical director of the Grand Prix of Beverly.
When's the afternoon? 4 o'clock?
4 to 8.
I'm on vacation.
Dum, dum, dum.
Hello. I'm at Cafe.
Well, maybe we can have our business meeting there.
That's not a bad idea.
All right.
Maybe catch up to Paul at the end of the race.
There you go. All right. Well, that was tremendous. I appreciate that. And all right, next up, we're going to see if we can talk with Milton football coach Steve Dombowski. This is North Shore Sports Night on a Monday night. We'll be back.
MSO Radio, keeping you in touch with North Shore news and sports newsmakers, such as Adam DeBadges, girls basketball coach at Bishop Fenwick High School.
I'm just really happy. My girls play great, I thought, and just tough. And they've been there 4 times in a row, so, you know, it's like the old John Wooden quote there. I think he said something about, experience doesn't matter. And, you know, experience is overrated.
Congratulations to Bishop Fenwick on their state title. This is MSONewsports.com.
Thank you.
Stay in contact with us by following us on Twitter at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. MSO News Sports, keeping you in contact with the North Shore.
Well, as happens, every now and then we sometimes don't make connections, so we'll see if we can get a hold of Coach Dombowski very soon. And, of course, Coach Steve Dombowski, formerly Swampscott High, successful football coach, moving on down to Milton and having great success down there as well, and currently president of the Football Coaches Association in Massachusetts. Now, other stuff we have on the agenda here. We will be talking, good Lord, willing, and the crick don't rise, to Steve Krause, who is the sports editor of the Daily Item and itemlive.com, and also to Ben Goodhue, who is known to Gloucester folk, former Gloucester football player, also an educator in Beverly, and a former Beverly High School assistant coach who's moving over to be an assistant coach over at Marblehead, and a lot of changes over at Beverly High School. And we will hopefully talk with Coach Goodhue in a couple of minutes as well. So why don't we take a quick break so we can dial up again, and we will let's check in with Coach Goodhue next, Tim. This is MSONewsSports.com. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're thinking about replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows. Why Anderson? With low E glass, low maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interiors, you can turn simple window replacement into significant home improvement. See the Anderson Woodwright replacement windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back, and we do have Ben Goodhue on the line. Ben, former assistant football coach over at Beverly High School, now moving over to Marblehead. Hi, Ben. How you doing?
Mr. Moore, how are you? Thanks for having me again.
Mr. Goodhue, I'm well. And listen, I know that for so many years you have been an educator at Beverly High School. You've worked with so many of those kids and an assistant football coach and also involved in weight training and all that kind of stuff, skills and so on. The times they are changing at Beverly High School.
Yeah, it's dramatic changes. You know, we lost a lot of our firepower from the administrative perspective, but we've definitely brought in some great people to replace those candidates. And, you know, a lot of changes afoot, but, you know, as they say, sometimes change is good. But it's definitely a lot of win-win for places like Wilmington and Marblehead and Falmouth, Maine. But you know, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be definitely different, but we're all going to just, we're status quo at Beverly High. We're going to keep moving forward.
Well, we'll get to Beverly, we'll get to Marblehead football in a second. But yes, at Beverly, some terrific changes. We've met so many of the new people on board. We know Coach Morenci, of course, who's had such great success over at Hamilton Wenham. But, Ben, I looking now from the outside, looking in, a brand new offense, I presume, at Beverly High School coming in with Coach Morenci.
Yeah, you know, Coach Morenci's obviously, you know, carries a lot of weight in his success at Hamilton Wenham. He actually had one year he worked at Salem High as well under Coach Gallagher. So he's been one of the deans of the North Shore offensively, and he's brought in a really great staff of former Hamilton Wenham assistants. And most importantly, he brought in a lot of Beverly guys, which is nice too. It's nice to restore that Beverly tradition again, and expecting a lot of big things out of the Panthers. And you know, it's going to be a little different being on the opposite sideline this year, but, of course, I wish them all the luck in the world. And, you know, it's a great staff coming in, and they got a tremendous group of student-athletes.
But, Ben, you know, one thing about tradition and culture and all that in sports here on the North Shore, I don't want to say this too callously, but in one sense it's easy to move from one team to another because there is such a close relationship among football players and coaches in the league. Am I saying that right? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, sure, absolutely. You know, as soon as things kind of unfolded in Beverly, you know, I started looking elsewhere for, you know, professional reasons. And, you know, Coach Rudloff was one of the first people to reach out to me. And we have a history together because when I first got to Beverly, he worked for Coach Bauer. He was our running backs coach and our linebackers coach. And you know, again, Jim, outstanding football coach, just a great guy. We've always stayed in touch. We've always had a lot of respect for each other's programs, and he's really done just an excellent job over at Marblehead, really putting them on the North Shore football map. And thus far, in my interaction with the Marblehead program, it's been nothing but positive. The kids are great athletes. They're very smart. They're willing to learn. They're willing to listen. And again, you know, just to be a part of that is you know, I'm very thankful for that as well. And, you know, I'm looking forward to having a good year with Marblehead.
Well, what are the changes been for you? What's the schedule that you're on right now? Is you're probably about 3 weeks away from opening up football camp.
Yeah, we're grinding away like most of the teams in the North Shore and elsewhere across the state. We're Monday through Thursday, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. We're doing the 7-on-7 passing league like most everybody else is. And as a staff, we're meeting a lot, just kind of going over X's and O's. I'm new to the staff. I'm new to the spread. We've ran the wing T for the last 10 years. But if you go back to 2008, 2009, Coach Bauer, actually, we ran the spread before Coach Day joined us. So I do have some familiarity with that. But I'm going back to coaching receivers and, you know, working on the defensive side is stepping into a new role as a defensive coordinator.
Ben, are you going to be implementing the strength and conditioning program that you had at Beverly at Marblehead?
Yeah, I've taken my model that I've used in Beverly and I've introduced it to the Marblehead kids and they are just soaking it up. You know, a couple of them have said this is probably one of the hardest things I've done. And the luxury of working 4 days a week as opposed to three, which we did at Beverly, is we can really specialize in what we want to focus on that day. For example, this morning was a sophisticated online strength program that Coach Redloff uses. So it was a very heavy leg day. So therefore, we did a lot of endurance training today. Now tomorrow I'll flip that, and it'll be more of an upper body day, so we'll do some footwork stuff. So every day it's something different, and it's always a new challenge. And, you know, the kids have been great. They've been committed. You know, they haven't complained, and they realize, and they see the end product and how it's working, and they just feel a little bit faster and a little bit quicker.
Are you staying in Beverly to teach?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I am just going to stay there. You guys know, as educators, it's very hard in this day and age to put schools, and, you know, it'd be easy to do that. However, I'm really invested in Beverly teaching, and I really love my teaching job. And again, I'm also going to stay coaching lacrosse and working with wrestling in the winter as well. So
well,
I'll pretty much have my hands full.
That's sort of what I was talking about, Ben, is so many coaches and educators on the North Shore, there's so many crossovers from school to school, and working with the kids is the cool thing. And you can compartmentalize for a game, for a season, and for a sport, and I think that's great. So really excited about all the changes that are going on. And, man, they happen fast. Seeing Coach Gallagher leave as principal and then Coach Bauer go over to – and that's right, you'll still be working with Coach Bauer in a sense, won't you?
Yeah, I'm just not used to it. You know, he pulls in the morning to go into his office.
Yeah.
It's just not, I'm not used to it yet where he's going in to go to work. He's usually coming out and
he
comes in and says hi to the kids, but now he's in a different role in a different light. And I don't think, I'm still calling him coach and it's just funny. So I think it's an adjustment for everybody. But it's awesome to have him over there, and the kids are really excited about it.
Well, you know, I think with Dan creating the reputation that he had over in his time in Beverly, you know, certainly made him much easier for the Marblehead kids to accept and to recognize, you know?
Oh, yeah, they were really excited. You know, to them, they look at it as, here's a gentleman who, you know, not only embraces the academic piece associated with Marblehead High School, but he's obviously been a coach. He's been an established coach. So it's the athletic piece. And, of course, a lot of people know that he and Sean were very heavily involved in the arts. They performed in a lot of the musicals. So I think a lot of different extracurricular groups are really looking at Coach Bauer as being the consummate leader. So that's really great to have.
Anything else, Ben, as we wrap this up?
I'm sorry?
Anything else as we wrap this up?
No, sir.
Coach, listen, great talking with you.
Attention, Ben.
Yeah, okay. And we will talk to you soon, and can't wait for football to get started. Ben, thanks so much. Congratulations, and good luck in both schools.
Well, thank you, and have a great night, and I look forward to speaking with you both very soon.
Thanks, Coach. Take care.
Otherwise.
Thank you.
See you on the sidelines.
Ben Goodhue, new assistant coach over at Marblehead. Take a quick break. Come right back with Steve Dombowski, who is the Milton High School football coach, and you all know who he is. His impact here on the North Shore.
Stay in contact with us by following us on Twitter at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. MSO News Sports, keeping you in contact with the North Shore.
Okay, we're right back now with Milton High School football coach Steve Dombrowski. And, boy, that's not easy for me to say, Coach, but you've been down there for a year, and you had a great first year. Congratulations.
Thanks, sir. Really appreciate it.
Steve, catch us up a little bit here on the transition going down there. I mean, you know, back home and so on. What was it like in the summertime and then getting ready for the season, and how did things go?
It was anything I ever knew. You know, starting with just the equipment and meeting all the kids. We had about 95 players on the roster, hiring the staff, no one I'd ever worked with before. You know, right after I was hired, we had a change in athletic director, so I had to meet, you know, two ADs and get familiar with them. And but the season itself was, you know, a great experience. It was, you know, I knew that we had some really talented athletes, and once we started to build our offensive and defensive lines, you know, we were fortunate to go on a run and win our conference for the first time in 52 years, and the community really got behind the team, and we won the Southwest Sectional Championship, and then we eventually lost to the state champion Dartmouth in the semifinals. So it was the winningest season in school history. It was a really, you know, good experience, humbling experience, and like I said, we were really blessed with some outstanding talent, and we would just put them in a position to make plays, and they were fun to watch.
Ed, go ahead. Tim.
Awesome. So it was pretty much a done deal that they were going to ask you back for this year then, after what you guys managed to do last year.
Yeah. I guess my contract got renewed.
All right. As you go into this year, Steve, what is the same and what's different as you prepare?
Well, I'm really trying to build the infrastructure of the program, you know, getting the parents more involved, to provide more opportunities for kids. And Milton is a community that didn't really participate in any of the summer activities or any of the, a lot of the off-season things that, you know, like lineman challenges, 7-on-7s. They just did their own little stuff in-house. And I've been taking these kids around now for two summers, you know, opening their eyes to the opportunities that are out there. And they're really enjoying themselves. The parents are starting to, you know, get behind the program, and the administration, you know, has made some, you know, made a real effort to improve the safety equipment, and the boosters in the community are, you know, it's really just been all positive. You know, we just got to keep it, you know, hopefully going with another winning season. We haven't, I don't think as a school, I can't remember the last time they had winning seasons, and I know that last season was the second time in 14 years that they had a winning season. So if we can go back-to-back, I think that would be a real step in the right direction towards building some consistency.
You know, Steve, you mentioned the Boosters Club, and that's the next question that I was going to throw out to you, is how active have they been in supportive of you?
Well, one of the things that I wanted when I took over was to be able to start my own club. You know, it's one of the things that Swampscott does an outstanding job of doing is providing that added support, that you not only protect the players and give them the things they need, but you provide an experience which is life-changing. And whether you win or lose, the player still has that experience. A lot of the North Shore communities and a lot of the top-notch programs in Eastern Mass have outstanding fundraising programs. Milton has a all-school booster club, and we have about 30 sports in Milton. We're very good in track. We're cutting edge in rugby. Where, you know, we've had some success in boys basketball, some success in hockey, but because we have 30 sports, you know, they raise 180,000, you're talking about, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 per team, and it's just not enough for what football needs. So, we're doing some things with the school booster club, but we're also building, our own revenue basis on an annual basis outside and copying a lot of the things that we did in Swampscott, because at the end of the day, I can only put the kids in the right schemes and provide them a great experience. Whether they're talented enough to execute on a regular basis, any coach will tell you that's going to ebb and flow in a public school. So I'm trying to control the things that I can control and give the players the best experience and opportunity to have success.
It has to be asked, has there been any pushback by either the school or the community in trying to strike off on your own and have your own booster club?
Actually, probably a little bit more the latter. they, the other coaches kind of appreciated me leading the way, and I've encouraged our parents to stay involved in the school program, because, you know, an all school booster club is probably led by about 25 people. So that's not enough to people to generate enough revenue for 30 sports. So I'm lightening the load on the school club, but I'm also asking my parents to still support their efforts as well. So we're not trying to work against them.
Mm-hmm.
We're just trying to enhance the experience. And, you know, in Milton, like the booster club would typically pay half of the team's uniforms cost. Well, we're getting new uniforms. I asked them to pay a third because I figured we would raise a third and the school would pay a third. And so they appreciate that I'm working with them and not against them. And a lot of the other coaches are kind of seeing, you know, the roads that I'm leading going down, and they're taking advantage of the same opportunities. I think that, you know, most of the coaches out there will tell you that you just need more to provide and to run a first class program. You just need more than the school can put into a budget. And, that's the direction of, you know, that football is going, and probably for that matter, you know, basketball and hockey, and with all the, you know, you see it really in the youth programs first with the expenses, you know, even for my own girls to play 11 and 9-year-old soccer, you know, you're paying upwards of $2,000 per player to be in an all year-round program. You know, and we're trying to do conditioning programs for $100 or in some cases free in public schools. And, you know, coaches a lot of times sacrifice their own time to do that, but I'm not talented enough to do that, so I hire someone to run our summer conditioning because I'm not qualified.
Coach, it sounds like another one of those instances where it's a 12-month-a-year job, isn't it?
Oh, I think every high school CEO, every high school football coach is a CEO.
Yeah.
And if they don't look at themselves as someone who's responsible 24/7, and if they don't feel like they're entitled to hire someone to sub out a piece of their business to me, that's what it is. You know, we can only control the experience we provide and the schemes that we give our kids.
Steve, is there...
We can't control what they do when they're not with us, and we can't control how much they work out.
Is there a... switching gears here a little bit now, going back to the Coaches Association, what do you see, if anything, on a bigger picture in Eastern Massachusetts with high school football? I know that, you know, the playoff system has been a matter of discussion for years, but that's pretty much settled mm-hmm. down now. So what's the overall picture for football this year?
Well, you know, personally, I think the majority spoke with they like a proposal that gets more than the league champion in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that there's plenty against that would like to see a longer qualifying period. You know, and I was a big proponent of the system as it is, but I'm now more leaning towards I'd like to see a 9-week regular season, postseason only for 8 teams in 8 divisions across the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't qualify, you sit out week 10 and you prepare for Thanksgiving. I think that a lot of schools don't want to play those non-qualifying games. They, and also if you're not a good team, that extra week to, prep your team to get healthier, to get stronger, to work with your younger underclassmen, to prepare your seniors for life after football if they choose to pursue it in college. I think that time could be used better than putting, you know, 2-8 teams against each other and hoping that 100 people show up.
Very well, yes, you know? Yes.
And I think, you know, it's gonna evolve. I mean, I've talked to many people about this as I've studied it, but I would truly like to see, to get away from some of the, you know, a lot of the coaches in Eastern Mass feel like we're the only side of 495 that plays any good football, which we know isn't true. But when it takes, you know, when a St. John's of Shrewsbury, a Division I size school, can pretty much get to the final of Central Mass to play in the Division II caliber, and there are several other instances of that across Central and Western Mass, a lot of coaches feel like we just need to have Division I across the state, Division II across the state, and then we need to give some options for schools that are like in a rebuilding mode that don't want to play at the level they should play at, where they could opt into a separate type of tournament. And those are things that I'm brainstorming with other members of the committee. But for now, I think the Coaches Association overall is pretty happy with the current layout. but I think it's still going to continue to be tweaked over the years. Because, you know, like I said, I feel like 9 weeks will really let the cream rise to the top. And I would love to see a Division I matchup of St. John's of Danvers going against Springfield Central, Division I. And maybe, you know, and maybe one's got to go to the other one. But, you know, in other states, we make a big deal out about bus rides. But if it's only for the top eight teams and we can still finish on the same schedule, you know, I don't think any athletic director, or I know the MIA wouldn't care if we played one less game for the majority of the schools, because there is a major concern, you know, now with how kids are trained, how kids are coached, how much rest they have, and how we're handling, you know, tackling and any kind of concussion issue. And you can see that with the new schedule that's rolling out this fall with us starting on a Friday and having 5 days really of no contact pretty much before we get into pads. So everything's evolving.
All right, Steve, this has been a great backdrop to what's coming up in the future and the look in Milton. What do we can we expect from Milton football this year?
Well, we have a lot of our linemen back. And we have our running back, Kobe Usazi, back, who's a member of our track team, one of the fastest 4x100 relay teams in the state the last 2 years. We have the fastest sophomore in the state, a young man named Smith Charles, who won the 100 in the indoor last year and was second in the nation in New York last winter, who we're going to try to incorporate into our offense as a wide receiver and running back. And we have an offensive defensive lineman that's already been offered by Columbia and a couple of other smaller schools. So we're gonna lean on our line. Our skill has kind of done a nice job of improving over the summer. You know, we're heavy into the 7-on-7 tournaments, and the team finished in the final four at the East Regional of the Under Armour tournament last Saturday. So they've qualified to play in the final 10. So I'm happy. I mean, I think our strength is going to be more of the line of scrimmage. But, you know, I'm just hoping we can make a good run, get better every week, be competitive, and find our way into the playoffs, because we're going to be in 2A, and I think anything can happen if you can get in.
Well, Steve, I great praise has to be given to you for, you know, what you did at Swampski, but then, you know, changing locations and going down and reviving a program that obviously was looking up for a long time, but now they're at a place where they're looking out over other people coming after them. Great job.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, Coach, we will catch up with you during the season. Looking forward to it. And, Steve, thanks so much for your help and for your information as well. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. I'll keep my eye on the Northeast Conference.
All right, we'll be looking south, too. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Coach.
Okay. Take care.
Take care.
That is Steve Dombowski, the football coach at Milton High School. That's holy rollies, man. What a wagon. What a great job.
Okay, he's got a kid already signed to go to possibly Columbia, yeah. Offensive lineman. Okay, he's got two of the fastest guys south of Boston on his team.
Nationally, I mean.
Okay, I can see shades of Mac Heron, you know, holding on to the shirt of John Hanner, yeah, as he
there
pulls
you go
out and whips around, well, the corner. I could just see that happening down in Milton.
I like
and
the fact
that it's going to torture some people.
I like the fact you brought up, did they rehire you? Okay, one more break. We'll go back with Steve Krause.
Hi, folks, this is Gerard Moynihan, and today I'd like to speak to you about the North Shore Student Athlete Program. Sponsored by Moynihan Lumber in conjunction with the Salem News, the Daily Item, the Newburyport Daily News, and the Gloucester Times. The program, now in its 24th year, celebrates high school students who excel not just on the playing field, but in the classroom as well. Male and female winners are chosen each month. All student athletes must be nominated by their coaches. Nominations for the program are made via email to nsstudentathlete@gmail.com. Youngsters who are nominated must have a B average or better. Monthly winners are then eligible to be selected as Student Athletes of the Year. Yearly winners and their families are recognized at a luncheon at the Salem Country Club held in early June. Please remember, all youngsters playing a varsity sport at any high school on the North Shore, public, private, or parochial, are eligible.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back for our final segment with Steve Krause, the sports editor over at the Daily Item. Hi, Steve.
How you doing, guys?
Good. And tonight we're going to talk cooking.
A little, yeah, Heather Atwood would appreciate that. Steve, let's clear out the attic. We talk. We just got through talking with a local golf, local football. We also talked with Steve Dombowski down in Milton about the state tournament lineup and so on in football and how well Milton High School did last year. But I'm open to whatever might be on your mind, your editorial mind in sports. What's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Editorial mind in sports. Let's see. Well, we're just all about Babe Ruth baseball in Lynn. With the city hosted the New England Regionals this weekend, and Lynn 15-year-old team, if it wins tomorrow, goes to the Babe Ruth World Series and Willington, North Dakota, which is about as far off the beaten track as you could possibly get. I looked at it on a map, and Willington, North Dakota is about 60 miles from the Canadian border at the corner of North Dakota that kind of is on the Montana border. So it's like it couldn't be any farther out. I'm just looking like there used to be an expression. There's no there there.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think that Willington, North Dakota might be what they were talking about.
So you literally can't get there from here.
Well, actually, they have an airfield, so maybe you can, but I think you're probably going to have to
puddle jump in there.
Make a few changes along the way.
The larger question would be is do they have any restaurants there? That's more important, I would think.
I would think that people do have to eat, Rick.
I don't know. there's a city out in, is it Iowa or what's Iowa? What's the other one out there? I don't know. Somewhere way
Idaho.
Out. Idaho. That's it. Idaho.
They're mixed up.
Yeah, well, there's a place out in Idaho. I know. I know someone who goes out there, and in their town there is, and I'm not exaggerating, one restaurant within 50 miles. So, would you be going out to coverage out there if the kids make it?
I don't think we will. I think we'll probably hire somebody out there for the week.
Call Matt Roy.
Well, good luck to that one. All right.
That was erased there.
What else is cooking, Steve?
We got.
Okay, should the Sox get sales?
Not if he's going to cut all the uniforms to shreds. I'll tell you this. I like him. I think he's a good pitcher. I am of the opinion that I would not trade Jackie Bradley for him. I wouldn't trade Mookie Betts for him. And I wouldn't trade Xander Bogaerts for him. Otherwise, anything goes.
Yeah. New Radio, they were talking today on 98.5 that they would trade Jackie Bradley Jr.
You seen him play lately?
Yeah,
he's pretty darn good.
He's hitting over 300. Why would you trade a guy hitting over 300?
He's a 4 or 5 tool player.
You know? Yeah, and well, he's the oldest of the three.
Why would you give up a 5 tool player? I mean, give me a break, seriously.
Yeah.
He's now been doing this for more than a half a season. If you're doing this for more than a half a season, it's not a fluke.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And Betts and Bogaerts, forget it. They're going to be such stars. You just keep them until it gets to the point where you can't sign them anymore. But that's a long way off.
You know what it gets me, Steve, with Jackie Bradley Jr.? Everybody was, you know, Tim was saying a year and a half, 2 years ago, let the kid stay. Let him stay so he can hit. Okay, he's demonstrated he can hit. He can hit with power. But the thing that absolutely blows me away, and we knew his defense was good, but his instincts in the outfield and the gun he's got for an arm, he and his quickness, he positions himself in such a way, he knows where the ball is going before it leaves the bat.
The arm is what impresses me.
Oh, yeah.
I remember listening to a former big leaguer, John Kennedy, actually. I remember John Kennedy and I were talking one day when he was with the North Shore Spirit, and he said that, you know, having an arm in the outfield is overrated. And I said, oh, really? And he said, yeah. He says, it's more important to be able to go get the ball. And I said, okay, fine. But when you get it, you don't want them running all over the place on you. And his response was, how often does that happen? Well, I'm telling you, this kid, with his arm, it's like there isn't a thing he can't do.
Right.
And his arm is impressive, and Betts' arm is good, and you know, between the two of them, nothing's going to get past them. I just, in the meantime, this kid Seal can pitch. There's no question he can pitch. But he does seem to be a little bit of a head case. And, kind of warning signs go up. You know, we've had some monumental head cases in this town, and I don't recall any of them coming home with a world championship.
Who were the guys who got on the plane and went to Israel during the season?
Gene Conley and Pumpsy Green. Oh, yes.
Gene Conley also played for the Celtics.
He did.
Yep.
So did Frank Sullivan.
Like, we were in the first or second grade when that happened.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's the one that comes to mind. Just, okay, we're going to take a little break. See ya. Oh, my word.
You had Bill Lee. You know, what they ever win with him? They won one pennant. They had Kyle Everett.
Yep.
You know, the head case, the end all head cases.
They had Manny Ramirez.
Yeah, well, they actually won a couple of World Series with him.
Yeah. Well,
I think he was clever.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think he was as big a head case as people made him out to be.
No, a lot of it, I think, was an act. Yeah, he was. I agree with you. Well, Steve, what else is going on? We're kind of out of time here, but what's coming up in the sports section with you guys besides Babe Ruth?
Well, you know, once August starts, which is any day now, sadly, gears get shifted, kind of. We start prepping for fall sports. You know, we do a big preview section at the end of August for football. And, you know, unfortunately, it's going to be here before we know it.
Yep.
When school's going to be going back and working out for the fall sports. And that's a bittersweet time for me because, while, you know, it happens just at the time when you've just run out of things to write about. You know, the summer is just such that, you know, everything ends all at once, and you have about 2 weeks where you just got nothing to write about, and you're scrounging around, and then all of a sudden, fall sports starts, and it's kind of like, my God, where'd the summer go? But on the other hand, you're saying to yourself, now, you know what, I got some things, we get some things we can write about now, we got some pictures we can take. Okay, we made it, you know, and that's the good and the bad.
Steve, how did the Celts do in the draft, in your estimation?
The Celtics?
Yeah.
I like the kid they took number one. I can't think of his name offhand, but I like him. I think he's going to be
Brown.
Pretty good.
Jaylen Brown, yeah.
I think they're going to be all right this year. I think just getting Horford, I was never under any illusions they were going to get Durant or that, you know, Westbrook is coming or even Griffin, who I also think is a head case. But I think even just with Horford, give them a big man that they didn't have, and they certainly have enough little guys, but they needed a big man to kind of make other teams honest. And I think they get, you know, I don't know if they're going to win.
I think,
yeah, but he wants to go and be a four. He doesn't want to play the middle.
What's that?
Horford wants to go out and be a wing.
I think they could maybe finally hit the 50 plateau this year in wins.
Who do we see about repealing the three-point line?
What's that?
Who do we see about repealing the three-point line? I watched the seventh game of the NBA Finals, and that was the most boring close game in the seventh game I've ever seen in my life. I hate the three-pointer.
I didn't see it. I was working, unfortunately, that night, and I didn't see a second of it. I followed it, you know, just through tweets and stuff like that, but I saw enough of it on tape that
yeah.
I was very happy that Cleveland won because, and that LeBron James did well, because I still think best player in the league.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And I'm not a LeBron hater. I actually kind of like LeBron.
He's amazing. All right, Steve, we got to go. I'm going to get you earlier on next time so we can flesh this out a little bit more.
All right. Hey, good to talk to you guys.
Same here, Steve. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Steve Krause, the Daily Adams Sports Center. That's it, Coach. Another fast hour. We went a little bit beyond, but a lot of information in there.
Yeah. Yep. Gary as usual, and Steve Dombowski just touching on so many different aspects of being a head coach and the program and what it entails and the role of the school, the boosters, you know, and I really appreciate him answer those questions.
Absolutely.
As to the nature of the boosters and possible conflicts and all. He was very forthright. I really appreciate that. And because there are schools that have a total booster system, and then there are other schools that go, no, you want a boosters club, you know, get your own.
Well, the idea, too, is his ideas are going to be helping the other boosters as well. So it's excellent.
Yeah.
All right, Coach, that's it. I'll be back next Monday.
I will not.
Okay.
I will be on the high seas.
There you go. All right. Okay. That's Tim Kerr. That's SpongeBob SquarePants. I'm Patrick Starfish, and Squidward is our producer and engineer. See you next Monday.
This is MSO Radio at msonewsports.com.